Welcome to the iPod, a podcast series from Ophthalmology Times, where we engage with key opinion leaders about the latest innovations in the areas of surgery, clinical diagnosis, drug therapy, research, technology, or practice management. In our next episode, Ophthalmology Times' Cheryl Stevenson speaks with Dr. Peter Pollack and COO Zora Harrison of Ocala Eye in North Central Florida on the protocols and technology their practice has implemented throughout the pandemic that has allowed them to safely and efficiently treat their patients. Take a listen.
Today we're joined by Dr. Peter Pollack and Zora Harrison. Welcome to you both. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Sure.
Thank you.
So we're at the point right now where it's unbelievable. It's been nearly a year since the first case of COVID has been present in the United States. And we just want to kind of revisit that. And if you could take a few minutes and kind of talk us through the changes that you've all experienced in your practices, kind of the year in the life of an ophthalmology practice, or what are some of the challenges that you've really addressed and seen?
So thanks, Cheryl. One of the things we've realized throughout this whole pandemic crisis is the key thing is to have resilience. I think that's important for medical practices. This won't be the last time that we face an existential crisis like this. There was a philosopher, Jameson, in 1984, who coined a phrase, moral distress, when they were looking at healthcare professionals that had to make a decision between two difficult choices or two equally bad choices. And if you think about that, we've all had to put up with that this year, and not just the frontline healthcare professionals, but all of our employees, their families. Do you go to work or do you stay safe? Do you send your kids to school or do you stay safe? And the opposite of this moral distress is resilience. So that's really the key. So it was important for us to try to keep things going as much as possible. There are a lot of aspects to resilience. I mean, we're basically focusing primarily on business continuity, revenue, things like that. It was important for us to be able to keep as many employees as we could. We think we did a pretty good job. Zora can touch on that shortly. The doctors withheld pay for a period and then took, a cut in pay for a period. So it's important to maintain the resilience of the entire practice. So what are some of the things the practice can do apart from that? What can we control? Some things we can't. We had a recent hiccup with Medicare. So one of the things we can look at are premium services, premium cataract, refractive, optical, aesthetics, hearing, dry eye. So those are some of the important things. As an overview, one of the strategies that we were looking at, specifically some of the changes and initiatives that we did. I'll let Zora handle that. She's a practice administrator. So
yeah, absolutely. I think Dr. Pollack touched on a lot of things that we've faced as challenges. And one of the things in our practice that I feel like was a little bit unique and I was very thankful for was our board being so resilient themselves and really putting our employees first. We're probably one of those few practices that didn't experience any layoffs. And it really became apparent to us that we, as a practice, had to, number one, wanted our employees to know they were safe so they could come to work and help our patients. Then we wanted all of our doctors to know they were safe. And then most importantly, we wanted those patients to feel that way when they came in. Or, some visits, as you know, through this whole pandemic had to continue. Retina was a good example, cornea, glaucoma. Even though we minimized visits as much as possible, we had those patients that, really needed to keep care. So we tried to focus in the beginning on two things. I think it was number one was safety. How do we keep everybody safe, right? Like what CDC protocols literally changing by the day, are we going to do and even do more? What can we do that's even more than what they're recommending to keep everyone safe? So that was one of our focus. And the next was we have a business to run, right? We have a business to take care of. We have a population that's depending on us to be there. from our employees to our patients. So we really got together as a team. We started our pandemic planning process before we shut down. So our practice went into a voluntary shutdown before the actual, our area closed. About a week before the governor called a closure in our area, our practice decided to go to emergency only. So that week prior to that, we spent hours as an administrative team determining what were we going to do, how are we going to protect our practice and our patients. And when you get a group of people together that really love healthcare and really want to take care of patients, it's amazing what they came up with. So we decided to do things like we did an IOP clinic that was drive-by. We called it our drive-by clinic. And it was a drive-up clinic where patients that had glaucoma could have their pressures checked. That was very scary for them. As soon as you call patients and said, hey, we have to cancel your next appointment, they immediately became concerned, my drops are going to run out, or how do I know my pressure's okay? So we decided to do this. We have an amazing IT department, and within a day, they whipped up a template that allowed us to cover all the bases, get that information to the doctor, and determine who needed to be seen. And that worked. We had patients that we said, okay, we're going to need you to park your car. Your pressure is high, and we're going to get you upstairs to one of our doctors. And all of the doctors teamed. If that doctor wasn't in the office that day, that didn't matter. Whoever was in the office took care of that patient. And that was pretty much through the whole entire pandemic. Everyone worked as a team. So that was one of my favorite things we did. And that lasted for quite some time. We immediately rolled out telemedicine. We took a little bit of a different approach to telemedicine. We decided that we would search for all of the applications that were user-friendly and give patients options. So poor doctors had to say, okay, this one's on DoxyMe, but this one's on iCare Live. This one's a FaceTime call. This one's just a phone call, but we booked them that way. But it worked. It really worked because we found in our population we served, not one application would work. You know, there were some that enabled devices. So we made sure they had phone call visits. We did something too to maintain revenue sources, which was we pulled a report of all of our patients that were on any aesthetic product or dry eye product that we sold. And we called them. We said, we will do a mail order for you and send it to you, or we will do a drive up. And we created a drive up pickup at every location that patients could pick up all of their dry eye products and their aesthetic products. And that was really great. We saw a very small dip in the utilization of our dry eye products when we did that. So that one was really more focused on, hey, not only do these patients need these products, and we know how easy it is to say, oh, I've ran out, the office is closed. But we also wanted to make sure that we kept our business, you know, running. That was a fun and actually experimental process that we then later in our community, where we have an office that's in a complex that's retail. And then we started noticing other retail offices doing drive up pickup for products. So I really feel like we were kind of the trendsetters. You know, we did that literally the week we closed in March. So we were a little bit ahead, I feel like, by driving those services. That was our optical director that came up with, you know, that idea. So we did approaches that were also patient care forward. We had two nurse practitioners. We immediately transitioned them from they worked on the oculoplastics team. We immediately transitioned them to triage. And that was so successful. The patients really felt better talking to a nurse, number one, but it was a billable visit. And they decided, does the patient need to be seen today, tomorrow, or maybe is this just a over the phone, you know, visit? So our practice was able to transition into that, you know, pretty quickly as well. So those were just some of the things we did to make sure that not only were our patients cared for, but we felt like we were making sure the revenue sources in the practice were, you know, a steady stream as much as possible, because obviously during that time in the early pandemic, there was no PPP funding. Yeah. I think most of us felt a bit in crisis mode for the first 6 weeks of this pandemic, that it really became a problem. So those were things that we did that I really do feel that kept our practice running until some of those federal resources became available.
Go ahead. Interestingly, you know, we saw a few months later kind of an uptick in refractive, and we started, you know, having our coordinators find out, you know, why is this happening? It seemed to be attributed to maybe, you know, expendable income that was available because people weren't traveling. And we also were getting a lot of the foggy glasses syndrome. That people couldn't wear or didn't think they could wear contacts to work. So they, you know, they were calling us to have their LASIK done.
It sounds like you've really adapted some very creative approaches in managing this, you know, crazy situation. Yeah. So in regards to telemedicine, are you still using that in as a supplement to existing practice, or has that changed at all since maybe the early days of the pandemic?
It really has changed. Our patients come back in as soon as safe and possible. We did as much as we could to make them safe. So we instituted what we call pre-screening, which allowed the technician to get information over the phone prior to them coming in. That reduced about 12 minutes of their time in the office. We also put up tents outside with fans, and we had outdoor seating in our locations. One of our locations had a lot of golf cart access. Most of our patients use golf carts, so we set up golf cart, you know, spaces that were 6 feet apart, and made sure patients waited outside. And we still do maintain those. We keep our chairs separated as well right now. So we found with these safety protocols and requiring masks, we actually made masks mandatory in our practice before it was recommended. Required, I should say, in our area.
Before it was cool.
So our patients had became accustomed before it was cool. And I'll tell you a little funny story. So we were at a board meeting in the first week of March. We were talking about the pandemic, and Dr. Pollack said, well, maybe we should get a temperature screener and check everyone's temperature when they come in the door. And myself and the clinical administrator said, Dr. Pollack, that's a lot of patients. And we just couldn't even fathom. And now we couldn't imagine not screening a patient when they walked through that door. So it's funny, if you think back a year ago, we thought it was just absolutely a crazy idea to scan temperatures on every patient, but we do those things. And I think the biggest challenge that we had to face was the unknown, and how we got past that unknown was the pre-screen. We went through all the COVID symptoms over the phone. We guaranteed before those patients came in for their appointment, they had not been exposed and had not had symptoms. And that results in a lot of patients, you know, avoiding them coming in and being potentially infectious. And we were checking at the door. You didn't even enter, you still don't enter the building without knowing that you are symptom free and you know, fever free. So I think with those measures, we've been able to pretty much resume our patient in-office care. So if a patient were to ask, we'd absolutely offer them the telemedicine. Just found in our community that with the measures we've taken, that they are comfortable coming in, and we've been pretty successful going back to not the same workload of patients, but definitely in-office visits.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the iPod. We hope you subscribe at iTunes and let us know what topics you'd like to hear more about. Stay connected by going to ophthalmologytimes.com, subscribing to our newsletter, and following us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and LinkedIn. We'll see you next time.